It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're on a tour of what's in our cereal bowl this time of day, from the influence of ancient porridges to the cold breakfast cereals that we grew up with that had that prize, that toy buried inside the box. Join in by calling with your questions, your thoughts about cereal, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Catherine Cornell Dolan is an associate professor of English and technical communication at Missouri University of Science and Technology. The book is called Breakfast Cereal, A Global History. Casey, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. Yes, let's start with the powerhouse Cheerios, the largest cereal brand in America. Why is Cheerios so popular?
It's interesting. Actually, Cheerios comes along pretty late in the game in terms of historical breakfast cereals and such. There's this technology that comes about at the turn of the 20th century. There's a puffing gun that is invented by a man. I believe his name is Alexander. And he runs grains through this machine, this gun. And because originally, I'm cutting myself off here, and cereals had to be like flakes or nuggets or these old. So the older cereals looked like either the cornflakes look that we can all picture, or maybe grape nuts, shredded wheat, things like that. But once they started having shapes and puffs, so the Cheerios that you're talking about, it had to have this new technology. It had to be puffed. The grain had to go through extreme heat, and then the carb in it would explode kind of like a popcorn. And it would make the corn pop kind of puff, or then any of the shapes that we think of. And that's what brought about the revolution, the tons of shapes that we had, including Cheerios. And Cheerios is such a staple. It's simple. It's a newer technology. This is that puffing gun was first debuted at the St. Louis World's Fair. So in 1904, they were puffing rice in it. So Cheerios come about, but the taste and the wholesomeness and all of those things really do harken back to the earlier, simpler cereals before there aren't the sweet flavors in it. There's no marshmallows in it. So it's safe. You know, the parents feel good to give it to their children. And you notice that babies eat it. It has lots of whole grain in it. So yes, so Cheerios definitely gets a good rap nowadays.
So it's so interesting how the upper Midwest, you know, General Mills produces Cheerios. We see, we see Michigan being such a powerhouse, and Battle Creek, Michigan in particular, with Kellogg. Why are we, just such an epicenter here for cereal?
That's a really good question. And there's a couple of thoughts about it. There's, And the relative proximity to the farmlands of the grain, relative proximity to big distribution centers in Chicago. So you can get the trains into Chicago and then the kind of regional trains into the different Battle Creeks, General Mills kind of areas. It's cheaper than the New York, Boston, Philadelphia kind of epicenters might have been. So those are some of the theories I have about that, why the Midwest seemed to be the place where this all took off. Also, these were all the breakfast cereals that we all think about in boxes in the breakfast cereal aisle all started out at health spas, at sanitariums. And there is something about wanting to go to one of these, Battle Creek Spa, that you want somewhere that isn't the urban center. People were trying to get out and away from it. Part of the health benefit was actually just being somewhere more attractive, more rural, more natural. So I bet that has something to do with it too.
Casey Dolan with us, author of the new book about the history of breakfast cereal. You can join in. Questions about what's in your bowl at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Casey, I mean, we see the staples of wheat, rice, maize, the corn, key ingredients in today's cereal. Has breakfast cereal shaped the economic fortunes of farmers who plant these crops?
That's a really good question. And one that I actually don't talk about much in the book in terms of actual the farmers themselves. Farming has always been a difficult job and one that, you know, it's so tenuous. But of course, and I would imagine, I don't know, actually, that's a really good question. And I don't know the answer to that. I could look it up. No, this is what I can always do.
aligning more closely with the book, you write about how Ojibwe and Potawatomi tribal communities eat versions of steamed wild rice with maple syrup or for breakfast or as a pudding. What is the influence then of native food ways on breakfast cereals?
Sure. So in the terms of porridge, there would have been the native peoples, the Ojibwe up in northern Midwest, obviously, having rice down toward Mesoamerica, being much more maize and corn. But when the breakfast cereals, when the Battle Creek, the Kellogg's and Post and General Mills are taking off, they're really not looking to the native communities around them for ideas. But nowadays we are doing more so. So nowadays, different flavor combinations are coming into cereal, different wild rice. You've probably noticed that wild rice is much more available in grocery stores and you can find it in places and, not grocery stores, but maybe health food stores and, mm-hmm. and different areas like that. So it is something that people are starting to take more seriously now, for sure, in a broader scale.
You mentioned porridge. How is porridge so connected to nutrition and really human society as it exists?
Definitely. So porridge is where it all starts. And it was really interesting as I started researching this book. I hadn't thought about talking about porridge but as I did more and more work, you really wouldn't have anything else without this thousands of years of history of us eating the warm cereal before we got around to the cold cereal. Because before, people were eating these kinds of, and whatever grain your region had. So if it was the Fertile Crescent, you had, is that my wrapping up sound?
No. Carry on.
Oh, I don't know what I just heard. I think I heard my cat playing with her bell or something. Sorry about that. So yes, people, you know, the Fertile Crescent, it's the wheat and the barleys and these early ancient grains. In Asia, it's rice. In Mesoamerica, it's maize. And each place they develop a porridge out of that about 10,000 years ago, which is a very long time ago. And what happens is you need to have the ability for people to eat and store their foods. Like if you have to just eat what you have harvested, it can't be cereal then. You have to eat, you know, you're preparing meat, you're hunting, you're gathering or whatever, but you can't just let it sit there because other people, other animals will eat that. And so we have the technical innovation of ceramic and pots and baskets and things that can hold grain overnight. And that's what really brings about this whole concept of even breakfast or having, also the ability to heat the pot and cook the porridge, you know, in a pot, you know, so you need it for both of these reasons, to store it and to cook it. And that's really what changes us into this agricultural society, these revolutions in technology that happened about 10,000 years ago in these different parts all over the world.
Casey Dolan, author of a book about the history of breakfast cereal and the cultural influences shaping it across the globe. Call in with questions about what you pour into your bowl and why. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the origin of breakfast cereal and the trends that influence what we walk past in the supermarket aisle. Call in with your cereal questions along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Casey Dolan's book is A Global History of Breakfast Cereal. Let's bring on a call now. Joe is joining us from Appleton. Joe, what is your question?
Hi. So I was wondering, like, when I look at cereals, like, they're basically desserts, right? I mean, they make cereal ice cream now. Has cereal, like, always been, like, just super, super, super sugary? Or, you know, what caused it to become so sugary? And why isn't there, like, healthy cereals? Why aren't they as popular?
Joe, thanks so much. Casey, give us a tour through the sugar content rise.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's the main question, isn't it? And it really has been since the invention of ready-to-eat cereals, which happened in the mid-19th century and really popularized in the late 19th century, it has been a battle between giving the consumers what they want, which is more sugar, and then giving them something that is a healthy option for breakfast that's also convenient and something that children can serve themselves quite easily, which is not something children can do with porridges, for example, because you need a hot stove and all of that. But with, you know, just a bowl of cereal and milk, that's a very simple breakfast. And with the addition of vitamins and minerals and adding milk for protein, it actually is a pretty healthy breakfast. But the cereals, as they were originally invented, and I can go into that later, were quite bland, they're very healthy, and they would keep you, you know, they would help any GI issues that people would come into these health spas in the Midwest and upstate New York and stuff. They would help you feel better, but you wouldn't look forward to them. They weren't delicious. They weren't tasty. And as they started marketing and making them into these big brands like Kellogg's brand and Post and General Mills, there was this whole push that people, the consumers, needed it to be sweeter, needed more cereal in them. And there was a question about how much to add. And you have the big players like C.W. Post, John Harvey Kellogg, and his brother Will Keith Kellogg. They're going back and forth. Do I add more sugar? Do I add less sugar? And the brothers, for example, the Kellogg brothers, Will Keith ended up winning, and they ended up adding more sugar to the cereal that they actually sold to the general public.
That was so fascinating that even way back at the inception, the Kellogg brothers are fighting over added sugar. I'm like, this fight goes way back.
Yes, exactly. It goes and back and forth and back and forth, even into, and then the 1960s happen, and it's happening again. Oh. Then there was, so in the 20s, 30s, there's a move to actually make these frosted cereals, to add sugar to the cereal before, you know, on top of the cereal. So the frosted mini wheats and the frosted flakes and all of those kinds of things. And the logic there was actually that it would save kids from adding their own sugar to it, you know, because you have the cereal and then you have the sugar bowl and you're starting to put the sugar bowl, you know, the sugar directly into the cereal. And they were like, this will actually reduce the amount of sugar that children are eating because we'll have pre-sweetened the cereal and therefore they won't feel the need to do added sugar. Of course, that didn't work. Of course, they took the frosted flakes and then added sugar to it.
And then they rebrand, like Sugar Smacks becomes Honey Smacks and then Sugar Pops to Corn Pops, like trying to disguise it.
Yes. And it largely works. They don't even change anything. They just change the name. Yeah. But there are, surges and kind of waves. So in the 60s, there was another big moment where people were thinking this was far too much sugar in their cereals. And there was a real desire to have healthier options, as you were mentioning. And that's when the crunchy granola really takes off. And there's a man, Leighton Gentry, and he invents this, what we now think of as crunchy granola. And it had sugar in it. It kind of goes back to that earlier roots where it does have honey and syrup and things like that in it and dried fruits and things, but it's much less than the kind of, you know, Fruity Pebbles or, you know, something that you're picturing, these, like, as you say, like dessert things that are happening on the breakfast cereal aisle right now. And so yeah, so that was a a return to something simpler. It was marketed in boxes that were kind of sepia toned. It was all very nostalgic and a return to easier times, kind of a move with this granola in the 60s. But of course now it's back to and cereal as usual, and it just seems to be a kind of ongoing battle.
It's like the ebb and flow of added sugar.
Exactly.
Oh, Joe, thank you so much for the question. Casey Dolan with us, author of a new book called Breakfast Cereal, A Global History. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Katie in Eau Claire now. Hi, Katie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for your guest about a cereal called Red River. It's out of Canada. I grew up getting it when we would go up to the border and zip in and buy boxes. And now I can't find it anymore. My local grocery store used to carry it. Have you heard of that cereal? Do you know anything about it?
Is this a hot cereal, Katie?
Yes. Yeah, Red River was it was super grainy, delicious.
Casey,
I haven't heard of it, but I just Googled it as you were asking, and it does look like it is in the world on the interwebs, but not for cheap, it seems. And I'm looking to see what's in it as well, because I wonder if there are things that are in it that are elsewhere, that if you get, have you found that like Quaker wheat or cream of wheat or something like that is similar, or is it very different?
No, it's a very grainy, there's a very grainy cereal, not mushy like an oatmeal. And whenever I'm out shopping and about, I see if there's some natural food store that has something that's similar. And
Right.
I think it was a licensing tariff issue that maybe they couldn't distribute anymore in the United States. So it
That's
might be
very
wrong.
possible.
And
Well,
then
my very brief Google search thought, and I don't know, can I name names
sure,
or
go ahead.
brands on
We're
the, okay. You might check Bob's Red Mill, that brand.
there might be a
They,
likeness there.
yeah, they might have like a there's a 7-grain hot cereal that they seem to brand that is that is a comparable. The internet is telling me it's comparable.
Katie,
I don't know if that's helpful at all, Katie.
thank you so much for the call. Let's turn to grape nuts.
Yeah, sure.
Post created grape nuts in 1897, influenced the history of cereal production. What can you tell us about grape nuts? Because there aren't grapes or nuts in the cereal.
You stole my main joke there. Yes. So the name comes from he decided that he was using a sugar called maltose, and he called that grape sugar. And then he thought that the twice baking process of these little nuggets gave it a kind of nutty flavor. And so that's where the grape and that's where the nuts name of this cereal comes from. But it is made of wheat. Yes. So there's no grapes, no nuts. So Post is a fascinating character. They're all fascinating characters. It's amazing how much personality is happening in these. In this history, so he had Post, C.W. Post had been suffering for a long time with digestive issues, and so he actually went to the Battle Creek Sanitarium, where the Kellogg's had gotten started and were getting really famous, and presidents and the Rockefellers and all these really amazing fancy people were going to the Battle Creek Sanitarium as the kind of de rigueur health spa of the era. And there they served what now we know as cornflakes, and they were really getting stuff started in terms of the ready-to-eat breakfast cereal industry. They're the key component, the key figures. And John Harvey Kellogg, the man who ran the Battle Creek Sanitarium, he was very proud of himself. And he would have people come into his test kitchens. He was happy to give tours, and he would show off how they made all the stuff that they were serving people. And C.W. Post he recovered. He did really well at the sanitarium. He was really happy with what happened there. So he went on these tours of the test kitchen.
And let's pause at the tour of the test kitchen here with Casey Dolan, exploring breakfast cereal coming to life. Your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you have a kitchen cabinet stocked with cereal? Maybe boxes line the top of the fridge? We explore the affinity for breakfast cereal across the world and here in Wisconsin with a book on the origin stories and the people who built up a cereal industry in the Midwest generations ago. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Casey Dolan's book is called Breakfast Cereal, A Global History. So Casey, picking this up, CW Post, the creator of Grape Nut Cereal, walks into the test kitchen, Kellogg's Sanitarium test kitchen there in Battle Creek, Michigan. What does CW think?
And yes, and he loves what he sees there so much that his first impulse is to steal it, to make his own version of it. So, you know, as you do. And so he, not only does he buy a venue right across the street from the Battle Creek Sanitarium and call it La Vida Inn and goes into direct competition against the Kellogg's, but he also goes into direct competition against the Kellogg's and boxes and markets a flake cereal. So the first cereal he sells is a flaked one. So before the Kellogg's get around to making their own big company version, they did have a smaller brand that they sold mostly to visitors to the sanitarium that would then go home and wanted to have that the food that they had at the sanitarium for themselves again. But it wasn't like the mass production that would come. And that's what So CW Post went off and did some dastardly things and did very well for himself and made, you know, in 8 years, I think he went from unwell and quite unwell to like a millionaire. And it took off. And that's what made the Kellogg brothers fight about whether or not they should take him on and start their own big company. And Will Keith, W.K. Kellogg, was on the side of we should start a company. And John Harvey, who was more in charge of the sanitarium, wanted to just focus on the sanitarium and wanted it to be the health side of things, not the marketing side of things. And eventually WK won and they added the sugar to it, as we were talking about earlier. And he started a competitive company against the Post company. And that's really where it started. And it kind of went like that ever since. But if in a fun way to think about this story into modern times, do you know how the Kellogg's logo is a signature?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If we can all picture that box. So Post had already started his company. And so Will Keith wanted to make it clear to purchasers that he was the original, whether or not CW Post had kind of beat him to the punch or whatever. And so he was signing the boxes. In the beginning, he signed each box himself. And eventually they got a stamp and they made it into a stamp. But as a way of saying, this is the original and everything else is an imitation.
So, this is authentic cereal,
yes,
opposed to
yes,
the person
exactly
across the street, you know, I don't know. But you also call CW Post the grandfather of American advertising. What influence did that marketing strategy have on Grape Nuts even today?
Absolutely. Yeah, he really did. We wouldn't have cereal the way we have it now, if not for Post's advertising and just... And then everyone having to join him, you know, from the Shredded Wheat and the international companies. And basically, the history of cold breakfast cereal is the history of marketing cold breakfast cereal. The two just have always been hand in hand. And if you think about today, you had mentioned the toy breakfast cereal surprises and stuff. There's just always been some gimmick, some marketing campaign, some strategy that has gone along with cereal ever since they were put into boxes. So you start with the very first trademarked figurine on a cereal, which is the Quaker on the Quaker Oats. So that happened in the 1860s. And ever since then, people were just so excited to put stuff on boxes. The idea, there didn't used to be boxes. Of course, you would buy stuff in bulk from your local store. But once stuff started getting packaged and started being sold in bigger stores and urban centers, then that just became space people could advertise on. And of course, Post was one of the first to jump on that bandwagon. He would insert booklets and pamphlets and recipe booklets into the boxes of Grape Nuts. He would put stuff on the boxes of Grape Nuts about how healthy it is for you and how strong it'll make you, and all kinds of slogans. Then as technology developed after World War II in the 1950s, plastic machinery got much more sophisticated. And so it was easier to make very cheap little figurines. So hence the toy surprises and boxes of cereal at that point. And the games and the puzzles and stuff on the boxes to keep kids entertained as you're sitting around the breakfast table. And then into very recent times, and something that surprised, I think, a lot of people was during the COVID pandemic, the Post Grape Nuts, actually there was a run on Post Grape Nuts. They sold out in the grocery stores, and it was like toilet paper and what were the other things that people were selling out of, lumber.
Right.
I think it surprised everybody, because who would have imagined that Grape Nuts was the one that everyone was going to go to? But there was something, the theory is that there was just something nostalgic about cereal really is an ultimate comfort food at the end of the day. And the COVID pandemic was driving a lot of people to want comfort food and want that comfort. And of course, we had a little bit more time in the day. We didn't have to grab something and just run out the door and go to work, because of course we were all working from Zoom. And so, or working from home for sure. And so, yes. So there was this huge run on Grape Nuts and people couldn't find it in the stores. And there developed a robust black market trade in boxes of Grape Nuts, like secondary sites. And so, which is just the things you hear. And so eventually they were able to, the factories were able to get started up again, and they were able to boost production and up it and everything. And so they met the need shortly thereafter. And then the Post website said, if you have a receipt from how much you spent on this box of cereal, we'll reimburse you. We'll give little prizes for folks and coupons and things as a thank you for being such loyal, good customers.
CW Post would either be shaking their head vigorously, I'm not sure what direction, with the run as well as the aftermath. Casey Dolan here, author of the new book about the history of breakfast cereal, 800-642-1234 to join in. Liz in Lyons is here. Liz, what's your question?
Hi, I was just wondering what you thought about, there's a new cereal that had come out and it's called Magic Spoon, and they're claiming that they have less sugar and it's better for you and blah, blah, blah. I'm a traditional cereal eater, and I love cereal, but I was wondering, do you think that that's a good thing or it's just a fad, it'll just go away?
And you said it's Magic Spoon, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Casey.
Yeah, I just saw that the other night as I was fiddling around. Can I ask, what is your typical cereal that you like?
I like Fruity Pebbles, Cocoa Pebbles. I like pretty much everything. It's hard to decide. I do not like, however, the new they've changed the flavor of the Golden Grahams back to like the 80s style or something. It tastes
interesting. Yeah, the nostalgia market is very big right now for sure. So I can see why they would do that. I mean, I haven't tried Magic Spoon yet. I was actually thinking about going and picking some up and giving it a try just for funsies. So they're calling it keto and they're calling it high protein and less carbs and sugar and things like that. So it's probably interesting to try. They do have a Fruity Pebbles version, I think, don't they? This magic spoon?
Fruit Loop. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, something. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, yes, of course, it's a gimmick. Again, if you, everything that is cereal is a gimmick and is the thing that maybe will make it sell like slightly better than everything else, that doesn't mean it's not worth giving a try too and seeing if you like it. I'm trying to see if Magic Spoon is one of the major companies or if it's its own thing. It looks like it's its own thing. Which is, that makes it interesting. I've noticed there's a couple of these small cereal companies that are trying to take on the big guys. There's another one, I don't know if you've heard of, it's called Off Limits, and it's the same kind of, it's a very small company trying to take, you know, has different flavor options. That might be a fun one for you, just to see if you like, they have ones that are like, there's one that's pandan, that's like a South Pacific Islander, you know, fruit kind of flavor. So that could be, see if, you know, just to try something different and see what you think.
Something there to try, Liz. Thank you. Speaking of Off Limits, something that is not the opposite of Off Limits is granola. We haven't,
yes.
We haven't touched on granola, so many variations. Tell us about the history of granola.
Definitely. Yeah. Granola is really where my coming into this project came about, because I was interested in the fact that there's these two kind of moments in U.S. history that where granola kind of takes off. So the 60s with the counterculture movement, and even to the point where hippies are called granola, or like to do something green is to be called granola, you know. So obviously granola has a real moment in the 60s, and then but in the 19th century as well, in the late 1800s, there's this granola that leads to the Kellogg and Post whole breakfast cereal movement. Actually, Kellogg, the first cereal he makes at the sanitarium is a granola. So I was just like, what is going on here? So in 1860, so what happens is that the birth of granola and the birth of whole breakfast cereal, in 1863, I believe it is, James Caleb Jake Jackson, who's a name we haven't said yet today, but without him there wouldn't be the cereals that we know of today. He has a similar kind of sanitarium up in Danville, New York, and he serves a breakfast cereal there, and he comes up with his own recipe, and it's got this twice baked wafer, and that gets broken up into little nuggets and then is served for breakfast. The problem with him, and he called it granula with a U, and the problem with his granola was that it had to be soaked overnight to be palatable. So it was a bit like cardboard. So it wasn't entirely delicious. And then the John Harvey Kellogg had gone to that particular sanitarium and was checking out what they had and their recipes and what, you know, ideas to take back to Battle Creek. And he really liked that idea of the granola. So he came back and made his own. And it was slightly more palatable, and it didn't have to soak overnight. But he realized that he couldn't call it granola, because then he would get sued. So he changed the name to granola. So that's where the actual word granola comes from. And that works fine. It's still a kind of cardboardy, bland. It's a healthy cereal. It's not a tasty cereal. But then in the battle of how much sugar to add, how much
but
sugar
nothing
not
that
to
sugar
add,
can't you know, fix.
Then the 60s come along, and yeah, this Leighton Gentry comes along with the crunchy granola idea. And he, outside of, and he, again, it's the Midwest. He's in St. Louis, Missouri. The company he ends up selling his with is St. Louis, Missouri. And and it just takes off. And that is the granola that you're picturing in the grocery store aisles, or that you might make yourself, actually, because that's one of the easier cereals to make yourself. And you know, there's lots of recipes online, and there's actually recipes in my book.
And we're going to get there. I'm going to pause right there with KC Dolan, author of a book about the global history of cereal, what we see in grocery stores. Call in with your question about breakfast cereal, what you pour in, what you ladle into your cereal bowl, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We take a deep dive into that supposedly important first meal of the day, breaking one's fast, the influence of breakfast cereal through the ages. Bring your question to the discussion. Call in 800-642-1234. Casey Dolan is here, author of a book about the global history of breakfast cereal. And the back, Casey, contains some recipes talking about granola here. What do you recommend for making granola?
Yeah, it's actually a really fun recipe. It's delicious to make your own granola, and it's easy. That's one of the easier ones to do. So just lots of oats, and then fruits and nuts of your choice, add some sort of a sweetener. So either honey and or maple syrup, bake it in the oven for a couple of, I think it's at 400 degrees for 30 minutes or something like that. I can double check. And you flip it at some point in the, you know, halfway through, and you can make it as crunchy or as you know, you can make it the big cluster kind, or you can break it up a little bit more if you want. It is a fun recipe.
You can make it to your liking. I can't believe the book also contains the recipe for Rice Krispie treats. I just had to laugh.
Of course it does.
I was like, is this important academic documenting or something?
I have a really fun job.
And then there was grape nuts ice cream. We also have a link at WPR.org/mornings. How is grape nuts ice cream made?
Yes. So basically, what I would do personally is to add grape nuts to vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
In the actual official recipe, because I am lazy. But in the official recipe, you make your own vanilla ice cream in which you're adding grape nuts to it. But one of the nice things about grape nuts, I think one of the reasons that it is so fun and has these moments of nostalgia, is that it does have this nuttiness. And so it would give a nice texture to ice cream. I don't know that I want a whole bowl of grape nuts, but it's so great to add to yogurt, to ice cream, to thing, you know, on top of other cereals, things like that. So.
I like the one, I think it was the baked apples with grape nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really, because it had a little bit of sweetness, not too much. And then that, you know, that signature grape nuts kind of crunchiness. That was really nice.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a fun one. And some of these recipes, when you look back in the old recipe books from, you know, the 19th century and early 20th century, some of them are wacky. I was like, but this one is one that, yeah, absolutely, I can make this.
Well, John from La Crosse called in, wants to know, when did we start putting milk on cereal?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. So depending on where you're asking, almost right away, almost instantly. I know internationally, the company Nestle, which is one of the bigger breakfast cereal companies internationally. So the U.S. obviously is Post and Kellogg and General Mills, and not necessarily in that order. But Nestle is one of the biggest global ones that isn't a U.S.-based one. And they originally started out as a milk company. So Nestle was originally, it's like an acronym for We Are the Organ. I'm forgetting what the acronym is for, but something to do with milk company in Europe. And so then they decided to market cereal as a way to get people to drink more of their milk. And so they were like, there's obviously a connection here. So obviously, right away, there was the connection scene. It would have something to do with refrigeration, of course. So it wouldn't be until reliable refrigeration is happening that milk would be just guaranteed with your cereal. But that's earlier than you would think. That's not, so that's probably late 19th, early 20th century, which is right around when breakfast cereal is starting. So
in it, milk also will soften it and take a little bit of that edge off of the hard crunchiness that is so typical of the flakes.
Right. And of course, unlike water, milk does have protein in it, and it has all these added minerals and calcium and things like that. And so then it's in the early 20th century, like the 20s and 30s, that there's this real push with the breakfast cereal companies, in line with government regulations and government agencies, to try and make cereal like healthier and put all these vitamins in it so that kids, when they eat the cereal, will you know, they don't get rickets, and they don't get, there's these various childhood ailments that are eradicated basically because of cereal. So milk is an important part of that whole conversation.
Marty called in and wanted to point out that the central sculpture topping the Chicago Board of Trade building is the Roman goddess Ceres. Can you explain the connection there to cereal?
Sure. That's where the name comes from. Yeah. And of course, cereal really means any grain. So wheat, barley, corn, rice, all of those are cereals, are all cereal grains. And so she's the goddess of the harvest. And so, yeah, that's where we came up with the word cereal in our language for. So without her, we would call it important grain food.
Well, our time is limited now, but it's something, time is really interesting element here in breakfast cereal, because there's been this recent trend that we don't even have time to sit down for a bowl of cereal. What do you make of that, Casey?
It is an intense moment. If you, I personally say, perhaps you do need to take just this much of a break. Maybe you don't need to run out the door with just a granola bar. but there are the granola bar, you know, the
cereal bars, yes.
Yeah. They will find a way to sell you something still. and a lot of cereal. Then the conversation is just the same with the granola bars and cereal bars as it is with the boxes of cereal. Some of them are really good. Some of them are good meal replacement substitutes. And some of them are candy bars. Who are we kidding? These are made of sugar with like 3 grains in the middle only. And so you just have to keep your... Even if you're wanting just something you can grab as you're running out the door, you have to make sure that it's something slightly more on the healthy side of things, if that's what you want, if you want the healthy option.
Well, Casey, thank you for joining us and taking on this tour of breakfast cereal.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Casey Dolan is an associate professor of English and technical communication at Missouri University of Science and Technology. The book is called Breakfast Cereal, A Global History. Find links to the recipes we talked about at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.